Welcome to the Lucra Podcast. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis. My goal is to fan the flame of the dream in your heart. As my guests and I share our journeys on the path to success, you'll get an insider's look at how we got to where we are and the beliefs that create our reality. When you follow your heart path to ignite your mind and delight your spirit, you can create a lucrative life of freedom and purpose. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, my friends, to another amazing episode. I am here with my friend, Riley Dane. I had the absolute pleasure of meeting Riley many, many, many years ago. We were just talking about how long it's been since we have chatted, but he was making a movie called The Abundance Factor a bazillion years ago. He had Sean and I in the film, and that is how we met. So, Riley, thank you so much for being here. I am delighted about this conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to get to chat with you. It's been a while.
It has been, as you said, a hot minute.
Yes.
I was like, wait, when did you make that film? Because probably after that was maybe around the last time that we ended up connecting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, so you are a filmmaker. And what I would love to hear more about is, so let me tell you my impression too, because this will kind of set the stage for this question. My impression when you came to Scottsdale to film us, I was like, this kid, and I said, kid, you were freaking young back then. I mean, you're still young, but like you were really young back then. I'm like, this kid from Canada is flying all over the place, making this amazing movie. And you had some like hotshot people. I mean, not us, but like hotshot people in that film. And I was just so impressed with your vision. So I would love to hear a little bit about the journey of like, how did that start? And how's it going? What are you doing now?
Yeah, great question. And it's funny because looking back now, I appreciate you saying that I'm still young, but I'm in my early 30s now.
Well,
and
that is, hello.
Yeah. But I was, 24, I think, 25, maybe. And so looking back, totally, I was a baby. And it is so funny to look through it, through that lens, because obviously that was my first experience making a film. And I realized in hindsight how rare it is to be able to travel the world and connect with the types of people that I was lucky enough to connect with, because it was so early in my career. So I have a lot of extra gratitude for that entire journey now, looking back at it. But to answer your question, I guess I had the filmmaking bug from when I was young. So I was always kind of out there with the little Sony digital handy cams that everyone had, just making like parodies of films that I liked. I tried to make like a Matrix inspired film. I had like a Blair Witch, like found footage style movie I had made with my friends. So it started off very innocently. But as I got older, I kind of decided that it wasn't exactly pragmatic to follow filmmaking, because I had this belief that it's like, you know, it's a shot in a million, like it's never going to work for you. So let's not even bother going down that road.
I don't like that story at all.
No. And so I was like, I'm going to just go down this marketing path and kind of just, you know, do what I think is the responsible move and not do any crazy risks. And I did that. And I ended up getting in a situation where I was like really overworked, really drained emotionally, spiritually, just any way that you can be exhausted. And this is actually kind of the inciting incident of the Abundance Factor in the film, is at the age of like 23, I think I was, I ended up through just sleep deprivation. I sleepwalk, and I never sleepwalk. And I stepped off the edge of a second story balcony in my sleep. And I kind of,
the craziest story.
It's the most wild thing ever. And like, I never even really had a history of sleepwalking. So this whole experience was like really destabilizing as a person, and kind of like, you know, you hear people say things like, oh, well, you could just go to bed one night and never wake up. And you think like, oh, yeah, it's because, you know, they had like some pre-existing health condition, not like something so
like walking off a balcony or something.
Exactly. It's not something you can prepare for or that you think about. So coming out of that experience definitely left me really shaken and nervous about life. And I started to look at life a little differently. And I realized that time is precious and time is finite, and that you really have to make the most of it. So if you're doing something that you don't really love just because you think that you're supposed to be doing it, don't do that and instead do the thing that you really want to do. So that was a big catalyst and a big push in my life. So I quit the job that I was doing. I went to film school and immediately out of film school, jumped into making The Abundance Factor. And that was my first foray into filmmaking. And I just was like, I'm going to sprint at this as fast as I can.
Well, you know what? Now that you're like showcasing the whole story, I can totally see that you did have a background in marketing first, because you, like, I will tell you, you really did that well, because I've been a part of different movies like since then, and you nailed the marketing part of like just getting that the word out. So that was awesome.
Yes, thank you for that. And that it was one of those things where, again, while you're in it, you think like, oh, well, I've just wasted all this time, this chunk of my life that's not useful anymore. And then as you progress, you realize, oh, no, maybe the universe had my back. And this skill set that I developed is going to come in extremely handy for this new kind of artistic path that I'm chasing. Because to your point, it's one thing to make something that is great, and it's another thing to be able to get people to see the thing that you've made is great.
Right. As anybody listening to this show knows, because my audience is mostly entrepreneurs, a lot of them are early stage or even aspiring to be something. And it is a challenge. It's like I could be, and I had this problem early when I was just starting as a coach. I'm like, man, I feel like I'm a pretty good coach. Why isn't my phone ringing? Like, why aren't the people signing up for a consult? Like, what's going on? I didn't know anything about marketing at the time. So to that point, and I love it what you're talking about, because that whole thing speaks to what I call heart path, which is you're always on the right path. And every little bit of that, even seemingly irrelevant random stuff in your life, will ultimately contribute to the final or the greater purpose. So like you being a crazy person at marketing, first and foremost, then that contributed to the film. So catch us up to speed now, because again, like we said, that was a little while ago. What have you done since, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, great question. So it's been a journey. So I made two follow-up films, spiritual follow-ups, not exactly totally related, but I made a film called Age of the Entrepreneur, where it was a similar premise where I kind of traveled and interviewed a lot of big entrepreneurs in the space. It had Tom Bilyeu from Impact Theory and Quest Nutrition. It had Russell Brunson from ClickFunnels, Les Brown, who's a legendary motivational speaker, and a lot of interesting characters. And that was its own experience that I can speak more to, maybe. And then the next film I did after that was a film with actually someone who I'd met making The Abundance Factor, a woman named Sonia Ricotti.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
Yes. And she had a book called Unsinkable. And actually, when I went to interview her, she said, it's so strange that you're here, because I've always had this dream of turning my book into a film, but I don't know any filmmakers and I have no idea how to do it.
So you're like, hello?
Yeah. And so she's like, I think maybe the solution just walked into my living room. And I was like, yeah. And of course, as you know, being in the industry, a lot of people say things and then there's not always follow up on those things. So you hear, you know, as a person that makes film, I hear a lot about, you know, somebody has a movie idea, somebody wants to do something. And I would say it's like a 99% not follow through rate to 1% follow through.
Right.
I didn't really take it for much at the time, but we stayed in contact and time lapsed to around 2017, 2018. That film ended up coming to fruition. And that was another really interesting experience where I got to travel extensively, speak to a lot of interesting people, some people whom I'd spoken to before, like Bob Proctor was in my very first film. John Azraf was in my first film, The Abundance Factor, with you. And so it was nice. It was nice to see some old friends. And what I loved about that film is that I felt I had really grown as an artist and as a filmmaker. And as you mentioned, I was very much a kid on The Abundance Factor. And although it had only been a few years of time, 3 years of like really pursuing something, you can improve quite a deal.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to be able to make something in the similar space, but with all of my filmmaking tools. And so I kind of consider that like the best thing I could offer to, that the personal development world. And, you know, it was the highest level of quality that I knew how to make. And so that was fun for me. And then after that, I decided that I kind of wanted to take a break from the documentary stuff, because the goal had always been traditional narrative film. I wanted to work with actors and I wanted to tell stories. And documentary had suited that, but I felt as though I had outgrown it. But I wanted to make that leap, but I had literally no experience working with actors and no experience writing. And so I jumped into that world, did a short film, pursued it, and recently I've just finished what I hope is my greatest work. And it's a science fiction short film called Adrift, which we're on the tail end of production on. And it was a chance for me to work with really talented actors, actors that are working on big television shows right now,
Nice.
and be able to write something that really, sang to my soul and was something that I wanted to be doing. And I didn't feel like there was any agenda or extra push, or and not worrying about the marketing, not worrying about any of it, just really pursuing what I wanted to make. And in doing so, it's been so far, I think, one of the most rewarding experiences for me. So I'm looking forward to where it takes me.
Yeah, when is there a timeline on like when that might be available?
Yeah, I think like early next year, like I'm hoping January, we're good.
Sweet.
It'll be out to the world.
Cool. Okay, so tell me this, because I know that a lot of people, and I talk to these people all the time as a coach, they have this dream, they have this vision, they have this understanding of like what is in their heart, what is their soul's desire, and yet they, for whatever reason, a whole variety of reasons, I'm sure, don't end up pursuing it or maybe even following through on it. And your story, while yes, there was that like traumatic thing, which I actually love the word that you use. You said it was destabilizing. And I'm like, gosh, that's sometimes how the universe needs to get our attention, right? Like, because otherwise we're not paying attention until it completely just rocks us and like kicks us in the face. And we're like, oh, this is what we're supposed to do. So yes, there was that, but many people could have gone through that same experience or a similar experience maybe, and not taken the steps to pursue what you did, to follow that calling within you. So I wonder if you could speak a little bit to like how that felt, or maybe like what was the why? I mean, I get like the why, but I want to talk to those people that are too scared to actually go for it.
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's definitely a phenomenon that I've seen in my life as well. You come across really brilliant people who are extremely talented, but they're not people that, for whatever reason, are following through on those brilliant ideas. And then obviously it leaves them without accomplishing that. And it also leaves the world without being able
Right.
to receive it. So
Yes.
it's like it's a double tragedy. And I speaking only of myself, and what I experienced, I can say that there was a certain naivete in embarking on the journey.
That
Yes. And I think that's actually a really useful secret weapon that people should use more, because I'm sure, as you know, being an entrepreneur, by the time you get to the end, the completion of whatever you've set out on, looking back with all that hindsight, there's like a 90% chance you would never have the courage to do it again because of
is good.
just how
It's
hard that
so true.
was.
It's so true.
Yes. So I think part of it is just having a blind faith and be willing to be naive and be willing to not know what the answer is, but just to say, I'm going to take the step anyways. And I can really say that, like, the abundance factor was that. I had never made a movie. I had never produced a movie. I had never wrangled interviews for something before. It was just one, like, it's like, okay, I don't know. I guess you cold, like, let me look on their website. Okay, here's about us. Oh, okay, they have like a media thing or a PR. I'll cold email that. You get a bunch of no's, a bunch of rejections. You take that feedback and you go, okay, so if I write an email like that, it's definitely in the junk folder. Let me pivot and let me learn. Okay, now I'm doing this. And just iteration and just step by step. So I guess if I could condense what I'm saying into any actionable advice, it would be to not worry about the big picture, not worry about step number 10. That's really complicated and hard. Worry about step one or step 0.1, 0.2, and just get through that take what you learn and then do the next step. And I think you'll be impressed at where you can end up in a year or two from now.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. And it so speaks. I'm like literally in this situation right now. And I've been thinking about this a lot. And you actually just like named it. And I'm like, yeah, that's it exactly. Because I was thinking about when I started my entrepreneurial career, within 2 years, I was a disaster. Like everything bad financially happened. But I had no idea that that was possible at that time. So I went in like you with total naivete and just like, this is going to be amazing. Okay, let's see what happens. And then now I'm in another position of transitioning into something. And it's like a really, really scary situation. But now I know like how bad it could get. And I'm like, oh, this is way worse. I wish I was naive again.
Yeah, exactly. Now you know. You are no longer ignorant.
Ignorance is bliss, as they say.
It can be.
So here's something I want to ask you. I ask this to every guest. And you, especially you, having made a whole movie about this, I'm very curious about what you're going to say. But my intention with this show and with a lot of the work that I do is to help people with some of their money mindset. Part of that is defining wealth. So how do you personally define wealth?
This is a great question. It harkens back to the abundance factor in a way. I remember I asked everyone, what does abundance mean to you? And I think I interviewed like 24 people and I got 24 different answers.
Totally.
So I'm sure it's been a similar situation for you. You've probably gotten 100.
Lots of different things.
Yeah, I would say traditionally when I use the word wealth, I am referring to a very literal money-centric view of wealth. But I would say there's the holistic view of wealth, and that would be a wealth of money, but also a wealth of love, a wealth of health. And so in a holistic view, to me, wealth would be wealth in all areas, because that is definitely something that I've learned on this journey, that it's not so much going to be about these end goals, but very much about the journey on the way to attaining them is going to be what's truly valuable to you. Even though you think it's like, oh, I'm going to get this big paycheck at the end of this project, my life's going to be so great. You get the paycheck, it doesn't feel that great, but you look back on the journey of whatever you were doing, and those memories and those are really what fuel you and give you the kind of the fire to continue.
So true. And, you know, from my like perspective and experience now, having seen Sean, like how he lived his life up until like literally up until the day that he died, there he had tons of goals that he did not yet achieve, you know, lots of big things that he wanted to do that just didn't happen. But I'm like, it doesn't matter, because to your point, it is the everyday, the journey experience of like who he was becoming on the process of that. So yeah, totally agree. So let me ask you this. How does a typical day look in the life of Riley Dane?
This is a good question. So there are two versions of Riley Dane.
Okay, cool. I can't wait to hear.
There's the sedentary, working in post-production Riley Dane.
Yes.
And there is the million miles an hour, catching 7 flights in a week, interviewing 8 different people in 10 different cities. And I really fluctuate between the two. And what's interesting about it is that I spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, and I spend a lot of time back home here in Canada, where I am now. And in Canada, I'm in a very small town of about 2,500 people.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, there is a river and a mountain out my window. It's like being in the Shire, essentially. And so I'm definitely a person that needs both. If I were to just stay in a small, sleepy town my whole life, I would be totally unfulfilled and I would be miserable. But I've tried to stay in LA for extended periods of time, and I can't do that either. It's too much. And I'm like, I need to go stand in a river and smell some fresh air right now.
Yes.
But overall, I would say it fluctuates, but normally it's waking up. I take a shower. In the shower, I do like a gratitude exercise, which is something I picked up on the abundance factor and have just kept with me.
Nice.
Just try to think of, I write it on like the shower wall. I'll write 5 things that I'm grateful for. And I just try to pick 5 different things. So it's easy to be like grateful for like the really big things where it's like my car, my house, my whatever. But it's like, you know, I'm grateful that I am breathing air today. I'm grateful that somebody invented hot water so I can have a warm shower, right? Just picking five random things that I try to do differently every day. And then I start with work for me, which I used to do the opposite of. So I would, if I had client work or a project that I was doing for someone else, I would generally tackle that in the day. And then I felt like if I have time left over, I'm allowed to then focus on me.
I love this. Yes.
I have since inverted this and I go, I'm focusing on my work and investing in me. When I am done that, I am allowed to work on the stuff for the other people. And more or less, I would say that's how my day goes in a broad nutshell.
Okay, that is awesome. So I have this acronym that I use to ask different like detailed questions, kind of in line with like your typical day, but to get even more detailed, just so I and our listeners can learn a little bit more about like how we might do things, you know, like you do things or just with different ideas. So the acronym is HERB, H-E-R-B. The H stands for habits. So for you, you mentioned doing gratitude in the shower. I freaking love that. Now, do you write on the shower wall or do you have Aqua Notes?
I do. No, just the shower wall.
Okay, awesome. Just like in the steam. Yeah. Perfect. What other habits do you have that allow you to, one, prioritize your own stuff, and two, like have the focus and energy that you need to do those things?
Yeah, I would say I learned along the way that it's important to always be moving forward, because it's easy to say like, oh, well, I have this big thing coming up that I'm going to have to do all this work. So like for the next week, I'm just going to like not do anything because I'm going to be so busy next week that I got to like balance it out. And what I've learned is consistency trumps everything. So as I mentioned, I'm trying to pivot into, you know, narrative filmmaking work and writing. So writing was a big thing for me where I would do this thing where like I would be like really excited about an idea. And for like a month, it's just all I would do. And then I would take like 6 months off and I'd be so burnt out. I wouldn't do any writing. And then
you're still all or nothing.
Yes. Yes. And then you look at like over the course of a year, it's like, well, I only like really worked on one project, even though it was all encompassing in that window. That's really all I've done. And I feel like I could have done more. And so I've since taken a different approach, which is just to make progress every day. So if that's just opening up something I'm working on and writing a sentence, writing a paragraph, and sometimes that's all it is for a day. And as long as I have done something for the day, I'm okay with myself. I'm at peace. And oftentimes that spirals into like, no, I'm going to get excited and it's going to be 6 hour marathon of me writing, but I'm allowed to only do a sentence if I want to. Yeah. But the rule is I have to do something. And so I would say that's my main habit that I try to impart is just that there are no 0 days. There are always something has gotten done, even if it was as minimal as a sentence.
Riley, I freaking love that. And I would just want to like note for all the listeners how important it is. What he's talking about is that consistency trumps everything. A lot of my students will recognize like that whole concept because we talk about it all the time, but it's so true. And I love that you're just making it so, so simple and allowing yourself to have just that little bit by little bit by little bit. Because, oh, by the way, then all those little bits come together as the thing, which is awesome. So the E in HERB stands for environment. You talked a little bit about like LA versus your home in Canada, but let's say in your workspace, how do you set up your environment so that you can stay focused and productive?
Yes, good question. So we are in my office right now. Okay. So behind me is where I would actually edit. And so I have my bigger PC back there with my comfier chair.
Right.
And then this is my smaller, I just have a laptop and a camera. And I try to fill my environment with things that inspire me and bring me joy. So I have a Blu-ray collection here, although I do not have a Blu-ray player in this room. So these movies actually serve no function in the room that they're in.
But
I like, yes, I like to
inspiring.
See them. Yes, I like to walk by them and something about it pings my little heart and it fills me up with something. And so I have just a collection of artifacts and basically props and different things from different projects. And I try to keep something from everything. And I like to be surrounded by things that remind me of what my passion is and what I feel my purpose is here on this earth. So it's like when I'm in this room, I could never forget because there's just too many reminders.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important. And I love You mentioned that you don't even have the player for the Blu-rays, but you have just the discs. And it's like, that totally makes sense as a filmmaker. Like, I mean, for me, it's books. I'm a writer. Like,
yeah.
I have books everywhere. And that is so valuable to me. So speaking of books, the next one is R. R stands for resources. And that could be books. It could be programs. It could be people. It could be films. It could be any kind of resource. What I'd love to know from you is which resources have really, like, because obviously there's billions of them, but like which ones have really, really impacted you that you would recommend to others?
I would say podcasting in general, I would say has taken a precedent in my life over reading nonfiction books. And something that I like about it. So I grew up a pretty avid reader. And I was into like all the like the trendy bestsellers of the time. So like Malcolm Gladwell books and whatever.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. And I am such a junkie for information that I would just devour books. But as podcasts became more prevalent, what I loved about podcasts that I couldn't get in a book is that in real time, I could hear an author, you know, talk about an idea. And then I could hear the host of the podcast ask a question that maybe I would have thought while reading, but in a book, because it's a one-way conversation, you can't stop them and be like, wait a minute, can you explain this? Or like, could you go back? Like, what does that mean? And in podcasts, it is real time. And so I find that for me, at least, I can get almost as much information from just hearing a really good podcast interview with an author about a topic than I can through, you know, spending a month or 2 weeks going through a book. And yeah. So I would say my main resource is probably podcasts. The ones I listen to really varies. And I go through little spurts. And so there's a film podcast that I like to listen to. There's one called Script Notes, where they have just screenwriters on and they just discuss their process. And I love hearing about people's processes and how they get through things, because I feel like you can learn a lot from hearing how other people have solved a problem. And then when you come across it, you go, wait a minute, I remember an episode 102 where James Cameron said this is what he did. And yeah, so I would say probably podcasts are my main source of my biggest resource.
That is awesome. I mean, especially since that is what we are doing right here and right now. I'm like, yes. All about it.
Perfect answer, Riley. Yeah.
Right. Let's highlight exactly what we are doing right now. The B in herb stands for beliefs. So that could be either a spiritual belief. It could be just a perspective, a way in which you see the world. But what beliefs do you hold as true that have contributed to the forward momentum and the success that you've had?
Another great question. I would say a lesson learned over time, which is something that I heard a lot of people talk about, but I did not personally understand. And it's the idea of failing forward, essentially.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I remember, like, I would hear people talk on podcasts. They'd be like, you know, you just got to turn every failure into a positive. And then I'm sitting there, like, in the middle of a failure, being like, nothing about this feels positive.
This sucks.
This is miserable. I'm pretty sure this idea is total BS and like easy for them to say because their life turned out well. But like, what about me? But in going through life and navigating and experiencing failures, kind of like how we started at the beginning of the conversation, I had really written off my marketing career as wasted years that was foolish for me to spend doing that. And then in hindsight, it turned out that it was actually not wasted years and it came in incredibly valuable. And another thing is that, like, I am a musician and I play guitar and I love writing music.
Oh, nice.
And when I was a kid, it was either I was going to be a rock star or I was going to be a filmmaker. And those were the two choices. So as you can tell, like, super practical. And so I pursued both in tandem. My office is still filled with guitars. I still play every day. But as time went on and you start to see, you know, your peers in filmmaking and your peers in music, it became clear to me that I was advancing faster in film, and that was really in alignment. Whereas the music was still something that I felt a huge passion for, but it was maybe something that I wasn't as talented at. And at first it was like, oh no, like here's this death of this dream from when I was a child. Like, this means that, like, I'm not gonna fall through. Like, I'm not gonna be Bon Jovi. Like, it's heartbreaking. But then on this last film that I worked on, that I mentioned, I got to work with a composer. And it was my first time working with a composer. And I understood so much of her language. And I was able to articulate so much of my vision and what I thought about things, and we could talk about time signatures and, the beats per minute of a track. And I understood her and she understood me. And it was another one of those things where, like, oh, here's this thing that you spent so much time mastering, and you thought it was for reason A, but really it's for reason B. And so, in going through that, definitely the idea of failing forward and knowing that the things that you're doing are more than likely there to help you, even if it doesn't seem like it in the moment, or even if it seems like a painful failure in the moment, give it some time.
Yes, I love that so much. Tell me this. You have gone through, and some of those, what you're just talking about is like when you need to say, give it some time. I want you to expand on that a little bit because I know that a lot of people who follow my work are in the struggle. Why do they follow me? Because I've been there, I've done that, right? Like gone through it. And also then come out the other side. As you have gone through some hard stuff and like really just exploded in so many different ways. I mean, like, I just remember having a conversation with Sean and he was like, wait, who is this kid? And like, what is he doing? He's coming because, I would have been the one to like book everything and like actually have the details of what we were doing. And he's like, what are we doing? Like, what is this for? And I'm like, no, it's this movie, whatever. And then after meeting you, he was like, wow, like this kid is amazing. I'm like, I know.
I
Anyway,
appreciate that.
what
Thank
I'd
you.
love is for you to speak directly to that person listening right now that is like in that struggle. What might you say to them?
Yeah, I would say that it's easier to focus on what is hard about your situation. It's easier to dwell on how things have not gone your way or how they're not going your way. And it requires some courage to think of the things that maybe have gone your way, or maybe aren't as bad as you think they are, or if you gave them some new perspective, maybe you could find something in them. And I think it's about being willing to look for what could be good, even in a situation where you're like, Riley, I can tell you right now, there's nothing good about this. Be as an experiment, a thought experiment, be willing to just try to look, and I think you might surprise yourself with what you find.
Yes, and yes. All right, final question for you, Riley. If people are listening and they're like, whoa, I want to know more about this guy, like, what's he up to? I want to see when his new movie comes out. Where might you send them online?
Yeah, so right now I guess I'm like most active on Instagram. To be honest, I'm not like super active online. Instagram, which is just at Riley Dane. And ironically, we're doing on November 1st, we are doing a relaunch of The Abundance Factor. So we're re-releasing it,
Shut up. That's
and it's coming,
awesome.
yeah, it's coming back out. So that will be abundancefactormovie.com starting November 1st of this year, 2023. And
Well,
should be.
I'm going to link to all that.
Yeah, please do. And so it's actually been great. When you reached out, it was such perfect timing because I had just we were doing kind of like another passive editing on the Abundance Factor and just kind of updating a few elements. And you really did stand out as such a light beacon in the film that it's great that you reached out and I get to speak to you because you were really wonderful in the movie, and I would love for people to be able to see it and see you in that.
Well, thank you for that. And you know what I remember you telling me after the movie? I don't even know if you remember this, but you were like, Mindy, my mom watched the movie and like of all the people in there, she was like, oh, like that Mindy person was really awesome. And I'm like, oh my God, I love Riley's mom. I don't even know her, but that's amazing.
Yeah, Riley's mom, big supporter of Mindy, big supporter.
Yes. Well, this has been absolutely amazing to all the listeners. Absolutely go check out those links. I didn't even know, like, that was a surprise to me that you're redoing that. So I'm so excited to like promo that. And thank you, Riley, so much because one, great to reconnect. And two, really powerful things to say that I know will impact my audience so much. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you giving me the time to come on here and chat with you.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you create a more lucrative life. One, subscribe for free to my lucrative newsletter for weekly insights on business, money, and mindset. Two, join Club Lucra to connect with a like-minded community so that you don't have to go it alone. Three, work with me one-on-one to chart the course from where you are to where you want to be. Everything you need is at lucra.com. That's LUCRA.com. Lucra, where wealth equals well-being.